Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt. Thanks so much for joining me here today. This is episode number 366. And in just a moment, I'll be sharing with you a really fun conversation I had with Angela Fama. First of all, you'll hear me mispronounce her name a few times, her last name during this interview, but it's definitely Fama, F-A-M-A. Angela is an artist and photographer, and we have a fun conversation about a game she has created, the Death Conversation Game, and we play a few rounds of the game together too during this interview. Also, stay tuned through the whole interview because at the end, it turns out Angela is looking for some collaborators, and there might be some of you out there who would find it interesting to work with Angela. So just take a listen to the whole interview. And before we get started with that, I just want to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Martha Lundgren. I appreciate you so much, Martha, for stepping up, but also all of the other people who've been supporting me over the past few years by making monthly or annual contributions on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. When you sign up to join the team, you can get either a sticker, a mini poster, or a mug as a thank you gift, which will be mailed to you depending on whatever level of support you decide to give. And you'll also receive at the end of every month, the end of life news update, where I curate all the latest articles I find out there in the news and in research that's going on around end of life issues. So check it out. If you're interested, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support and you'll find a link to my Patreon page, but to other ways of supporting this podcast as well. So now we'll move on with my interview with Angela Fama, and stay tuned afterwards. I'll come back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Angela Fama. Angela is an artist and photographer who currently lives in Vancouver, Canada, and exhibits her work in numerous group and solo shows. She is also a recently trained death doula, the creator of the Death Conversation Game, and the facilitator of online seasonal Let's Talk About Death conversations. Angela writes that her praxis focuses on the inner and outer connections that can be made, pushing at the edges of the barriers surrounding sticky subjects such as trauma, identity, love, and death. And we'll be talking all about those sticky subjects. And you can learn more about Angela and her work at her website, Angela Fama, Fama. AngelaFama.com. Sorry, I knew I was going to mispronounce that. But welcome, Angela, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Karen. I'm looking forward to talking and sharing on the sticky subjects.
On the sticky subjects, yes. And ever since I read about your work online, I've been excited to talk to you, partly because I know in your work, you've focused projects around love and around death, and those are two of my favorite subjects to talk about and think about. So I feel like we have some things in common here. And I'd love to have you begin by just telling us about your story and how you ended up with these interests in the sticky subjects.
Oh, wow, that's a big question. I guess they're two separate. If we're focusing in on love and death, the love project came about just from, I guess I was born and raised a little bit outside of the normal structures of Western culture. I had a single mom in the 80s. We were very poor, and just my ideas of connection and love were very different from what it seemed like was being thrown at me with advertising and movies and stories, and even just what people would say, what I love you, but then they'd go do something. I just didn't really understand it. So in my mid-30s, I was like, that's it, I'm gonna go. I know it's a root, it's something that I feel like it's there, and I feel it deeply, and I know it's intrinsic to everything, but there's pieces of it that I'm missing for how to really understand what it is individually, and then often when I have questions like that, I recognize, well, if I'm thinking about this, maybe what are other people now? Not what's written, not what's being told to me, but what is my community thinking? What do they think about? Is this just me or is everybody questioning this? So I got into love that way. And then the love led to death. So, well, and death hit me before that as well, but I guess it made it in unavoidable for me to go further into death once I went further into love. So,
which is really interesting, because I think that ends up being true for all of us, because that was true for me as well. But on your, I remember reading on your love project, you took a van around parts of the country and interviewed people, right? And asked them, what is love? Which I thought was really fascinating to hear from a broad cross-section of people about love.
I did, yeah. Part of my work and my praxis and just my awareness in life is just how different and how similar, like snowflakes, what it is to be human. And I had the opportunity when I was a mid-teen, early teen, to live in a very rural areas of Zimbabwe for 3 years. So that also had a bit of a step out from I guess, standardized depictions of culture. So I was aware of how many underlying narratives there are and just how fascinating and exciting that is. So when I did the What is Love project, I made a point to take it outside of the normal structure of the art institution and try and approach and talk to as many people as I could, adults that are formulating ideas of love for children today, or just what it is to be in community. So I drove across North America and Canada and the US sort of as a circle around. I didn't have enough time or funds to do the entirety, but I tried my hardest to make sure I hit different diverse sort of groups. I went to a flea market in Athens, Georgia, and then I went to a farmer's market in Edmonton. So it just differences and some art communities, some not. And then sometimes I would just stop, and every time we broke down, I would interview the mechanics because it was an RV. It was an RV. I souped up to be a pop-up photo studio. So I would sit with individual people one-on-one and just document their answers to the simple question, what is love to them, past what you're told it is or past what you wish it was or what you think it should be, but what is it actually in your life? And in the project, I depict those answers in their face, in their words. I recorded it. And so I did my best to show it as true to form as possible without my own narrative getting in the way. Yeah.
Are there certain things you learned from it that came up over and over again that people share in common?
Yeah, I guess some of the questions that have come up to me post that project were, is it different in different places? And one of the things I recognized that it didn't matter where I was, there was always a similar diversity within the group. So for some, it was painful. For some, it's sexual. For some, it's spiritual. For some, it's an amalgamation of all. So I found one thing that surprised me that I learned that was almost overwhelming to try and absorb, which is part of where death came in, was when I first started the project, I sort of thought I was going to get to a sort of an average answer. Like I was going to figure out the question.
Yeah.
I've done projects like this in the past and I've expected different answers and usually it will come up with the same answer. So this one blew that out of the water and I didn't get one answer that was the same from anyone. I interviewed over 300 people and there was not one that was the same.
Wow.
And there might've been similar like pockets of, you know, themes or values or beliefs that were being touched on, but in each pocket, in each place got touched on. So it wasn't like in one part of Canada, there was this feeling of love. It was always a little microcosm. Yeah, and I think the thing I learned actually was how hard it was to hold that and how hard it is to really hold love and the diverse, multifaceted elements of it when you go past that Hollywood description of it.
It's really true, because as soon as I read about your project and I saw the question, what is love? I thought, oh my gosh, that's hard. That's actually hard to sit down and tell someone your answer to the question. And even though it seems like, well, love, that's an ordinary everyday thing that we talk about all the time and deal with all the time. And yet when you try to fully answer what it is for you in your own life and your heart, it gets more complicated, it seems to me.
And I was really impressed with how willing, I guess, the space I provided, and just the timing, the intimacy of it, without it being someone that was next door to them that they might, anyone might have to be accountable. The answer was meant to just be in that moment, not held fact truth for the rest of life. So the answers were really sincere. And I felt like I'm so grateful for the opportunity for everyone that was in there with me to go there, to take the moment to breathe and sort of be in the experience of looking past that first sort of, oh yeah, that's the, oh really, okay, what is it?
Yeah, how interesting. And so now that project, is it a collection of videos that are available somewhere to watch?
Sort of. I guess it's an ongoing project that when there's the opportunity to show the whole video, what I ended up doing was making, I photographed people and I would photograph them in process of answering the question. And I made a stop motion video for each person with their audio so that you weren't lost in your own story, hopefully, while you're watching it. The jolt of the camera sound kind of brings you back to witnessing whomever is speaking. I couldn't do every single one, so I did do photographs of everyone with transcribed their answers. So it's available in a few different forms. Right now, it's not, you can't view it online. For a long time, I had it easily. I wanted it, again, outside of the institutions. I wanted everyone to just be able to see it and read it and hear it. So there's an 8-minute clip on my website now where you get a good synopsis of, or I guess that microcosm. But there is a 2.5-hour video that shows in at different times in different places.
Hmm. So. All right. So that's something people could go to your website to check that out. And then I'm interested to hear you talk about how love ultimately led you to death.
Thank you. You got some great questions. For me, I feel things very fully. I'm a very emotional, I'm there. I can't avoid it. I've had some traumas that have made me have to really have the courage to look in. So when I think about love, it often, be a different way to approach that is, so from that point of view, I've gone and done a lot of different ways of healing. So I've done pretty intensive meditation, Vipassana technique, where you just are in your own body and you're sensorially working through. And one thing I've witnessed is that my feeling of love and pain, hurt, are very similar. So if I lose the words for it, that feeling in my body is entwined. So loss and death, if you look past the idea of a person, a body dying, every moment is dying. There's so much death. When you lose a friend or you lose a partner or you lose a pet, like this is, or you lose it, like someone actually dies, but a job changes, so you move houses, there's death everywhere. So for me, because I am aware of how much I feel the harder side of death quite a bit. And I get confused sometimes between that enlivened feeling and that pain feeling. So it really made me have to look and become accepting of the fact that I think the two are, without, if we don't put the human words on it, they're one and the same. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because in the bereavement world, we talk a lot about the idea that grief is really love. Like, we grieve because we have loved something and because it hurts us when we lose what we have loved. And so that they are intertwined, and it's a given. When we set out to love in this world, in our lives, we're going to feel pain. We can't avoid that. And if we're trying to avoid it, then we would avoid love most likely altogether. And yet still we would still feel pain. And so I really resonate with how probably on this search of yours, and after talking to a lot of people, it became very present and you became aware that you can't really talk about love without being aware of death and grief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how what you've said I about when you enter into love, you can't, it is going to end. And there will be, and the love itself doesn't end, but that idea, one form of it ends. And grief is very much a sign of love. You are loving when you're grieving. That is love. So shifting those understandings, or what we're comfortable, like expanding the definitions, that's pushing at that edge of what we understand love to be, or crave to one part of it as opposed to the whole of it, or acceptance of it. Yeah.
Well, it was interesting to me that you went on to create a game, the Death Conversation Game. And I'm curious about how you went to that place of deciding, well, we need to have a game that helps us talk about death.
Yeah. I had almost died when I was 30. So I had a car accident that I had a brain injury. And I'm a person that will talk, I will talk about anything. I've had to learn some boundaries on what's appropriate and what's not, and when and wow. But the facing death, when I was like so close to it, and when I was trying to heal from that, I realized that it was really hard to talk about. And the community, even the doctors or the counselors or the, like, It was like there was this elephant, it was being avoided. Like there was a lot of focus on bringing me joy and, oh, but you're not dead. And for me, it was like, holy shit, we could die. Pardon my, but any second, like it's so fragile. It's crazy. So I needed to talk about it. I was having a hard time even getting out of, like, I just was shocked. I couldn't figure out how people function. How do we get up and live our lives with this knowledge so close to us? So that was, I had to learn how to sort of, okay, I'll cap that right now. I didn't know how to open the conversations. I thought I could talk about anything, but when I tried, it was just met with some walls, good intending walls, but walls. And about 3 months in, or maybe 3 to 6 months in my healing, I had this realization that it was ignored to survive. So I had to kind of go into that to get past that stage. But I also, in the back of my head, this little like flag was like, okay, we're going to figure this. We're going to go there. You might not be ready right now, but we're going to go there. So then the What is Love project happened, and I ended up being going back to do an undergraduate degree in social practice and artwork, and I had an essay on death. And then I realized I didn't want to write about what others had written about death twice removed or thrice removed. And I decided, okay, what's missing is how do I talk to people that aren't necessarily, like, I've learned a lot of, and I'm sure you have found this tenfold. It seems to be if people have faced it unexpectedly early or are facing it due to illness or age. And that seems to be the only time people are able to talk about it. And that those are heightened states of tension and body anxiety. So not having tools to pull from to talk about it, I just realized, okay, if it's not out there, I'm going to try and make one. Because I found a couple decks that were good for certain specifics, but not necessarily for a broader range of it. So I tried to make what I saw there being a missing spot for. And I was only intending to ever only make one deck and have it be more of a social practice art project to encourage my community and the community around me to talk about it.
But now it's... Well, I really appreciate what you're saying for one thing about the medical profession not being good at talking about death, when that is a lot of times within a medical event that people come face to face with the idea that, oh my gosh, I almost died. I came that close, and maybe for the first time became aware of that death is all around us and death is waiting for us in a sense or at any moment. And it's very sad to me that no one is equipped to actually talk about it or just listen to what the patients are experiencing. And so I'm sure that felt frustrating to you at the time that there was no one to go to discuss that.
It was frightening, and it was unfortunate as well that I was continually being encouraged to take drugs to make me feel better. And I didn't want, I was like, no, this is, I'm facing a really traumatic thing. It's not going to make it easier if I numb myself out. Like, it'll just come back when I stop numbing myself. Like, this is something. And I'm not saying that isn't of use in certain spaces. But for this, it was just this instant without even giving me a second to be heard. It was, oh, well, we'll just numb you out. Since doing the deck, I've actually had some communications with people in schools trying to, like, they're trying to learn to be in doctoral fields, and they're recognizing they want to try and do studies with the game because they're recognizing their peers are still afraid to talk about death and their doctors. So this is that's a challenge.
and isn't it so true that a doctor who's afraid to talk about death would prescribe drugs to the patient, yeah, to stop them from talking about it? Because I don't want to go there. I'm not comfortable. Why don't you take this drug and numb out so you're not worried about it, and then we won't have to discuss it?
Yeah, it makes sense. And that's part of where the game, I was like, okay, even if it's the smallest bit, even if it's, you know, you can't move, you can't change the world, you can just change a spot at a time. So trying to create a space where I might not have been in the time of need, but I will say now I'm in a really different space because I've faced that conversation, and I can have that conversation.
Well, I love the idea of a game to encourage conversation, because it seems less confrontational than actually just going up to someone and saying, let's talk about death. But playing a game together seems to remove some of the stigma somehow. Is that what you found when you play it with people?
Yes. Yeah. I made it a format. When I first did it, I didn't ever want to have it be online, but that was before COVID. So I made it in the familiar format of a deck of cards, which is something that most, and again, I'm focusing in on the diverse culture that is within a North American ground right now. So the community that surrounds, most have had some familiar feelings with playing card games. So it's also, I kind of snuck in, it's not actually a game where anybody wins or loses, or you're trying to get to the answers, because there are no answers.
Exactly. Yeah.
A bit of a disclaimer that you read before, and I read it every time I play because it reminds me to put my head in that space. And some of it has been from the inspiration of doing post-trauma work in groups and how to share what's safe about how to have a space where you can listen and be heard. So that what you said about the doctors, maybe I just needed someone to hear. That was one of the big things. Was it's not about, you're not going to fix it for me. We're going to die. Like, however I feel about that, what I'm going to feel. But I would love to have a space to even try and figure out what that is. But if we're not talking about it, it's a lot harder to figure that out.
Even if the other person didn't know what to say back to you, to just make space to let you express what you were feeling, I think would have made a difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the game, I've tried to make a space for that. And both the, when you play, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but that listening space is always there. So whoever feels like sharing has that opportunity without being interrupted or without trying to prove something or the fear of someone challenging, you know, whatever you're feeling is great. It's what you're feeling. That's awesome. There's no right or wrong answer to the questions. So
tell us how it works, and then you and I can even like practice playing the game here. And
hey, we'll be full on practice. We're in. So what I would do if we were online, depending on how many decks there are, sometimes it's in a group, sometimes it's one-on-one, but I always try and make sure there's no preconception of how the game's going to go, because it's always co-regulated by whoever's playing. Like, I'm amazed at how many times I've played and each time the conversation is entirely different. Same questions come up, different conversations. So I don't know if we have time to read the, this, it's like maybe four, four sentences? Can I read the disclaimer?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because then, it's pretty short. Oh, it's even shorter than I thought. That's great. Oh, okay, never mind. There's disclaimers to read first. It says read first if you ever get the deck or you're online. The disclaimer is more like, I don't think there's any right answers. So go ahead. But the read first part. So the first part is to please listen with empathy and respect, being mindful of time, reciprocity, crosstalk, or assumptions. Create a safe space for sharing and subjective differences. Be conscious of details and their importance. Topics can trigger. If this is a concern, decide as a group what constitutes too much information. So I usually check if someone's really close to something and they want to be in the space, but they can't have something come up. So far, no one's ever actually had any blocks to it. So emotions are an organic part of the game. Ask for emotional assistance if needed. Assist others only if requested. Yes, no, short answers and passing is allowed. You're encouraged but not required to expand past yes or no answers. Assume prompts such as why, how, or share more accompany suitable questions. Boundaries and sincerity are both inspiring. So a death conversation game is meant to be fluid in meaning. So read the cards however you would like or understand them to be. Blank, or that's something else. And then answers can be considered in the moment and are not meant to be hard facts. So then for to play a game, I will draw a card and I will answer it first to lead way. I always find it's helpful to have a space that's open for sharing instead of feeling like you're on a stage. So I will shuffle, and since we're online, I'll get you to let me know when you want me to stop shuffling. So we have
Oh, okay. So we're collaborating.
Yeah.
Yeah. let's see. All right, stop now. Whoops.
So one of the more easier playful, hopefully, who knows. If there is a funeral for you, what song do you want to play? So I will answer that. Right now there is a Flaming Lips song called Do You Realize? And I think it's a really beautiful song just about how beautiful every moment is and how close we all are to death. And just whether you're in the pain or the easier part, it's all still part of beauty. So
That's interesting, because you would think that's something I would have thought about, because I think about death and I'm not afraid of thinking about my own funeral or planning it, but I honestly haven't ever identified one particular song. I'm trying to think, because there are a lot of songs that I absolutely love, but it would have to be a song that had love in it. And I like the song All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. It's kind of a more upbeat song, because I really like that message that all you need is love. And if you just remember that and just take that with you, you're going to be okay in life. And so that is one message I would like to leave for everyone. Just that reminder. And even, I guess, the fact that it's upbeat is kind of a nice way to go as well.
Beautiful. Thank you. Do you want to do another round?
Yeah, let's do. This is fun. Good thing it was a pretty easy question. So even though I hadn't thought about it, but
we started off with
that's good.
Tell me when and.
Okay. All right, now. Okay.
We're good. Thank you. Do you know an inspiring quote relating to death and or life? I'll think. I have such a bad time remembering quotes, so I've written some down.
I think that's cheating, though. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I get it.
That's okay.
It's true. That's good. That's good. It's right, because I've played this many times, so I got my backup. In the moment, that's true. I like that. Thank you. I will keep that. I'm going to pick a quote that I've carried with me since I was little or a teenager. Wishing isn't good enough. And it was Mae West. And for me, that means part of what I've looked at for facing death so closely in my 30s helped me to recognize, like, everything is fleeting. Moments are just so quick. So if there's things that you think you need, or things like love, if there's ways to reach out, things, just wish, thinking about it isn't enough. You have to act on in your life, and in you're the only one that knows what it is. So you have to fulfill it and bring it out and give it or receive it. So probably what it's meant. I got some other quotes, but you're right. It's cheating.
Well, only because I have quotes on my computer, but the one that popped into my mind is Steve Jobs' quote when he spoke at the Stanford. He gave the commencement address at Stanford at their graduation, and I'll have to paraphrase because I don't have it exactly down. But when he said that death is life's greatest invention or something like that. And the fact that in his talk, he spoke quite a lot about facing his own death from cancer. And it inspires me to think of death not just as a tragedy that we have to live with, that we have to accept, but that it's also one of the best things that's part of life, one of the best things that life includes, because it reminds us constantly to live as fully as we can, kind of what you were saying also, to live fully and live in the moment and embrace and enjoy it all. And I think we might just fritter our lives away if we weren't aware that they're short and fleeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much.
Oh, so I like that. These were good questions, but they did require me to use my memory a bit here.
Should we go for a third just to...
Oh, sure. Let's do a third and see what we come up with. So far, I don't know my choice of when to stop shuffling.
I'm trusting the card whenever.
Okay. All right, now let's try.
Which one, the top one or the bottom one?
Oh, the bottom one, we'll say.
Okay. Do you have an idea of how old you will be when you die? So I'll hold that up and I'll answer that one first. I haven't had this one come up in a long time. I have to think about it for a minute. I think this one causes me to... I get a little scared when I think about that. I have an urge and I know it's part of the stuff I've processed in life, is that I organize things to an extent that it's so tight that sometimes I don't actually breathe or live my life. And I've done a lot of work to learn how to just try and actually be in the moment instead of constructing or managing or moving forward. So when I think about how old I will be when I die, I get afraid that I'm going to attach to a number. And then it will always be something that comes into my mind, and then thus making me feel like my life is short because I'm just waiting for that moment as opposed to being in this moment. I also feel like I came so close to dying at 30 that I feel like, well, I'm living my app. Like this is my like ninth life here. I don't know, but I've got this is an extra one. However long it is rad. But I don't have, some people believe, you know, when you're 23, that I can't believe I made it past that. Like I'm just,
I
don't think I have an idea now. I try not to attach to an idea like that. For me, it would be an attachment if I had that idea.
It's such an interesting question, because do you have an idea of how old you will be when you die? Because it does bring up a lot of discomfort and fearful thoughts in some ways. And I'm aware of different parts of me reacting to it differently. Like my rational mind says, well, you know, my mom lived to be 89 and her parents lived into their late 80s also. So probably around then, you know, the rational part says, of course I have their genetics. That's probably when, how long I will live. But then there is a fearful part of me, because I have like so many things I still want to do. I have projects I want to complete and things I want to do. And a fearful part of me that says there won't be enough time. like whenever I die, it's going to be too early because I won't have finished everything that I want to finish. Then I start feeling panicky, maybe like you, pack everything in, work on this right now, get it all done to make sure I have time. Then there's another part of me that just laughs and says, oh, that doesn't even matter at all.
Yeah, I feel that laughter, just like, I can try and think about it all you want, but
it's, yeah, one of those uncertainties we don't know. And I like the disclaimer that there are not actually answers to any of these questions. So, well, it's really interesting. I mean, here we are, we don't even know each other, but we're able to read these questions and discuss them together. And it's really fun. And it does prompt me to think about things that I might never have considered that as, but that last question in particular, you know, I haven't allowed myself to think about that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The deck has quite an array of questions that are similar to that. Like one of them is, do you feel near to or far from death? That takes you can go many ways. Another one is literally, do you have an executor of will? Like, or have you been an executor of will? Like just really, really bookish ends of it. And then others are a little more metaphysical. So it just sort of, it's being curious also how different people will read the questions, however their need is for what they need to explore. So it can be the most bookish question, and then it will become a very metaphysical response to it, which is, I've appreciated how I lucked out in how I put the questions together in a way that they can be received in multiple facets, depending on who hears it and where they're at in that moment.
And it's interesting, I mean, because it works equally well for just two of us to answer the question, but I could imagine in a larger group, it would be really fascinating to hear other people's answers as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very neat when there's larger groups, and sometimes questions will come up that I think have pretty basic, like simple, a little bit more on the, if you've thought about death, you might've already considered that. But by the time a round is done, I'm just like, wow, I just learned some pretty cool new things. Like it's expansive, like it helps. And it also opens new questions for no matter how much I think I've explored a certain area, just the perceptions of different people and their own, because we don't, in general, I find I talk about it more since I've had this death, but in general, it's not a standard conversation. So I don't really get to know what my best friend thinks about that kind of thing, or what a friend, my neighbor, or a coworker, like just general things. I might know what kind of food they can eat, but you know.
And really, it still feels like one of those taboo topics or sticky subjects, as you said, that you know, you might think of asking someone about it, but then you stop yourself like, I don't know, is it actually okay to ask this person and try to lead into this discussion or not? Or will it offend someone or frighten them, or how will they respond? And so we're still at this place in our society where it isn't very comfortable to bring it up.
Very much so. I found since having the deck, I actually have to remind myself sometimes, like, oh, right, other people aren't as comfortable talking about this yet. So if I'm just throwing this out at a party, like when people ask me what I do, and I'm like, well, are you ready for this? You
know? Yeah. I know sometimes those of us, I mean, a lot of the people who listen to my podcast are comfortable talking about death. And I sometimes find myself like I'm not in the real world always. I have to get out of this group of people who are all comfortable with death to remember the vast majority of people in our society are not at that same place. So have you had feedback from people who've played the game? Any
comments? I have. Yeah. Something just recently, there's lots of different feedbacks I've had, lots, and most of them are very positive. I've actually never had a negative. It's usually about expanding. Maybe it's something where they're like, I'm not ready to talk about it anytime soon, but I'm thinking about it in a much expanded way that I wouldn't have thought about it beforehand. And something just came up recently. I bumped into a friend because it's COVID. Some people have come online to play a couple years ago, but I haven't actually seen them since. So I don't really know what their take of it's been. And this one friend was saying how she had to leave the talk a bit early because she has children, and I thought maybe it had freaked her out. And I asked her, like, hey, so how was that for you? And she was saying that she was so grateful to be able to have the opportunity to play it, but she's scared of the deck, but she's glad she has the deck because when she looks at it, she thought she'd be so easy to go with it, but she appreciated that it was there even if she wasn't able to open it yet. And then a mother-in-law came to visit, and now the mother-in-law has the deck, and she doesn't have the deck anymore because the mother-in-law was like, let's go. Like, she just opened it right up and started playing it. So that idea for me with the game and how people respond to it, it's, again, kind of like the What is Love Project. It's shown me it's such a great tool because everyone has their own relationship with it, and it's so different that when we're approaching such a topic that has so many sticky subjects, any way it's being approached is fantastic. So if someone gets it and just plays solitaire and looks at one question a year, that's still awesome. So it's been a really diverse response. Some people will get emotional and then they'll be kind of, you know, and then other people are like, let's keep going, round two, round three, round four, like just really different responses to it.
So that's true. Like, a single individual could just have the deck and even use it as like prompts for journaling or something, draw a card and then write about it in their journal. And so it sounds like you yourself lead groups online to play the game. Is that something you do on a regular basis or?
I do right now. It's called Let's Talk About Death, and it's easy to find on Eventbrite if you search it, or search it attached to the name Death Conversation Game. And the next one is on September 25th. Sundays, they usually always are, and it's 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., 2 hours Pacific Standard Time. And I usually encourage that people have their video on, and it's as much a real person-to-person interaction as can be. And the groups I keep smaller, usually about, I think, 15's been the max. And then we break out into smaller groups just so it can be an actual experience for each person to have the chance to share and listen a few times. I used to do them monthly, but right now I'm doing them seasonally because it does take space to hold that kind of space.
Yeah, for sure. And so, but then,
so I also want to make sure anybody that ever wants to join can. So if you can't pay the dollar to log in, just email me and I'll send you a link. Like, it's, I want everyone who's in any way interested to talk about death, no matter what age, no matter what culture, nation, like wherever, whatever you're pulling from, if you're afraid or if you're not, it's all good.
And so someone could like log in and join, but never actually answer a question. They could just pass on all the questions and just be there listening and learning and holding space.
And it's formatted in a way that everyone has the opportunity to either say yes or no. So if you're feeling like you might be a little shy, sometimes when it comes your turn, if four people have already answered, it kind of, I've had a lot of people open up when they might not have been expecting to.
Do you envision other people buying the game and then leading groups themselves or sharing it with
friends? Yeah. One of the things that I've written in the instructions or somewhere in there is just like, choose to read these deck however you want. If you want to play it a different way, if you want to make it a challenge, if you answer five questions, you get an apple, like, go for it. Like, however you want to interact with the game, if it's starting any kind of conversation on death, I'm all for it. So
it seems like to host,
yeah,
like it would be good for end of life doulas or end of life educators to have as kind of an icebreaker in a way, if they're teaching a workshop or bringing a group of people together to play a few rounds to get people talking and sharing a little bit. Do you know if that's been used in that way?
Yes. So most of the community that has been reaching out for the deck, which is, you can get it online, has been the Death Doula Network. And the teacher that I had, because I took the course after starting these conversations, has been introducing it to every class. And there's usually quite a few that reach out, and it has been used in that manner of just something to help supportive communities if there's some discomfort or just starting to talk about it, just opening, breaking the ice.
Yeah, I'm even curious. I'm imagining, like, what if hospices gave the game to families, and maybe not even the full deck, but just if some of the cards, and said, you know, when you're sitting with your loved one, like, you could draw cards and you could use this to bring up topics to to discuss together that otherwise you may not know how to ask. Like, you might not know how to ask your loved one, what kind of funeral do you want to have? But if it comes up because you're playing a game and reading a card, it gives you just enough space to be able to ask that.
Yes. And I hope that that's something that can come. So far, I'm just an artist that made this deck, and I don't know anything about business running to that extent. And I've had some interest in hospice, and I'm not sure how to. So that's more of a, I think it would be a great benefit. And I've had others tell me that. So I didn't just come up with that on like what you just said. So it's more that question of how to get it out there, how to have the hospice know about it. And so far I've been trying to let this journey with this game and even with the death doula work be really organic and just trust. And it's odd. Every time I have a conversation like the one that we're having, it reminds me why I shouldn't throw it in, just because it's so amazing to me, how much it could be of use. Like, I feel like it's a conduit past me at this point. Like, and it might be a shame to just let it appear. So, because I do think it would be a great benefit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
if I was lying in bed, yeah.
I'm thinking, what if people listening to this conversation might decide, I want that game. How do they get the game? Where can they buy it from?
So far, it's only online. Super small business over here. So it's just deathconversationgame.com. All one word, all together. Yeah.
And then they're going to shop so they can go buy it there.
Yeah. And it's for the love of it. So I do small batch runs. So basically at this point, the cost is just covers the making of it and the sending it. So yeah. And I hope to be able to expand it, to have it reach more, because I know I would have really loved to have a friend ask me if I was afraid to die when I was so close to it, and be able to feel like I wasn't pushing them to talk about it. Or it's the card somehow gives it that safety zone of, it's the card asking.
Exactly. I'm not asking you this question, but yeah, I think it's really wonderful. It's a great tool for people to have. And so people who work anywhere in the end of life arena, it seems like, could benefit just from having a tool, because we all need to have the means necessary to foster these conversations, and we need lots of different types of tools. And so it's a great thing to have on hand, though I can see lots of people just playing it in their family life or their day-to-day life, if they're comfortable with the conversation, and hopefully more and more people will be.
Yeah, I agree. The deck, the reason I even ended up printing it is because when I would host it as an art practice, the people playing it wanted to bring it to their family. And that to me was like, okay, if that's happening, I can't stand in the way of that.
Yeah.
And as there's also an app online if the deck is too expensive or if it's too tactile, there is an app that makes it really easy to just, the questions are all on there, and it's like $10 or something like that. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't want it to be digitized, but since COVID, it was actually healthcare workers that said that they would appreciate that, because then it's just easy. It's just one of many tools. They can just pull it out. They don't have to have had the deck on hand if they feel a need come up for it. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. That really makes sense. So that's nice to know. And that's at the website too, deathconversationgame.com, for people to learn about that. Okay. Well, I'm really curious about how you ended up deciding to train as a death doula. I know you said you haven't done work as a death doula at this point, but I'm just curious about that.
Ironically enough, I was born on the farm in Summertown, Tennessee, which is known for bringing midwifery to North America at a time in the 70s when you weren't allowed to do that in Canada. So here's this like birth center, and then here I am like, I'm going to go be a death doula. So I think for me, it's because of what I felt not being able to have some sort of support in that more just I don't know if it's emotional, but the more less than the tactile doctorial, like here's a number for your blood count. It was like having the space. And then the more that I looked around, I didn't even know there was such a thing as death doula. And for me, that's interesting because I'm watching it grow around me as, and it's really exciting. And the idea of the fact that I'm not afraid of that, it just makes me think, okay, here's somewhere that I might be of service, in a way that my experiences have led me to having that awareness. Like sometimes, I find it's helpful to, when you're in that kind of work, to already have your own experience of knowing why you might need that. So, and it's fascinating to me. There's so much to learn. And part of why I'm not practicing is because it was during COVID. So the tactile, that like, to be in the room holding space, I know I need to have that more than often so that I can be able to hold space with serenity. So as things shift around, I think I'm allowing myself to let that be something I'm training for a long time, and just doing a bit more of the learning, like all the different ways to care for a body after dying these days. That's changing. It's exciting. There's so much new.
Yeah. And we have to stay on top of it because there are new things coming up all the time. But that's really wonderful. I love hearing the story of how people are being called in a way to become death doulas, because I really feel ultimately all of us should be able to be a death doula for our loved ones and our neighbors in our communities. And so it's almost as if like, it's like our experiences are pulling us toward it. And for me, I guess part of me as a hospice doctor, I had the sense that because I'm trained in hospice and also family medicine, but I thought lots and lots of doctors can be family doctors, but not very many doctors are totally comfortable with hospice. And because I am and I feel this pull, I have to do it. I need to do it. It's important. And so I appreciate what you saying. You're comfortable with it. And so it makes sense for you to do the training and to be of service in that way.
Mm-hmm. And something else you said touches on, I have a bit of a punk outsider perspective on, I don't even think it's that punk outsider anymore, but that perspective on how that got removed from family and community and money and capitalism and putting a price tag on death and taking it out of the family that's even falling apart, a structure of a family. So part of that is me wanting to, like, I think that experience living in Zimbabwe helped me to see what a culture can be when it's not separated from each other, or a community not saying that in entirely, but at the time I was there in the community that I was within, I saw that surrounding me. I was like, what is that? That's beautiful. It's amazing. So part of that is wanting to not feed my energy into the part of the systems that I don't appreciate. Whereas here's a space within the system that it's only been the last few generations that have stopped doing this awareness. Like, and it's amazing how quickly it's disappeared, but how much our bodies crave that connectivity. And the more afraid we get of it, it's almost like if I get really afraid of something, it challenges me to look at it. So if death is something no one's talking about, I have to wonder why. You know, if it's something we're all experiencing, it's the one universal truth. Like, okay, why aren't we looking at that?
And you, as an artist, it seems like you have that creativity that pushes you like, well, I'm going to go find out about that. I want to go learn about that. Yeah. Well, I just love it. I love it that you've been called in a variety of different ways to look at love and to look at death and by your own experiences, and that you had the imagination and the instinct to create the death conversation game, which I think is, like I said, it's a wonderful tool. I know there are other games out there, but I think that each one of the games I've heard about, they're all different. And so we should own all the games. I mean, because you never know which one might be the right one for a particular group of people.
Yeah, I concur. Because when I looked around, I was like, these are great. The games that are out there are great. They just each one of us has a different sort of part to it. And so many different people will have a respond to different ones for different reasons. And I appreciate when you said that you've been trained to be a doctor in the palliative care and coming at it with heart. My whole body was just like, oh, can you start a whole revolution? Like, please run a school. Like, this is missing from, and I can see a lot of the people I talk to actually in the talks is a lot of palliative care workers and a lot of doulas or nurses that tend to, it's either curious folk like myself or people that work in the industry talking about how there's no space for them to acknowledge. They see 10 people die in a day and they try to take the space to feel it, but the industry doesn't, it's moving so fast and so regimented that there isn't, like, there should be death doulas aside the nurses, like working together in unison. Like, it's you can't have one without the other, right?
So, yeah, it's so true. And the culture of medicine has rejected death to its own detriment, because I think one of the reasons we're seeing a lot of burnout right now is that medical providers don't know how to deal with the deaths of patients. They don't know how to acknowledge and carry their own grief when a patient dies. And that takes a huge toll on them because they're shutting out so much of the experience, and our training doesn't do it justice, doesn't bring up the topic of death at all. And then doctors and nurses don't get comfortable with it, but we need to change. We desperately need to change that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like you're doing it. It's small pieces at a time. So
a little bit, one interview at a time, but your game, maybe I'd like to see your game in medical schools, because one of the things I want to see happen is a rotation for every single medical student and nursing student on death and dying and grief and loss. And the game would be a great way to bring students in to again, break the ice and get them to start talking and to not be learning about death from like a third person perspective, as if, oh, I'm learning about other people who are going to die, but to really approach death from their own personal experience and recognize it's for them. They need to realize they're going to die someday and they need to deal with it too.
Mm-hmm. So I'll put the call out now to any listeners. If anyone wants to co-business with me and become the person that reaches out to those fields, I've had a little bit of interest from students saying exactly that. So it's more that issue of I'm an artist. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to get the card to those people. I'm trying to learn. I'm learning little bits at a time. So I do think it would be a great benefit.
Yeah. Well, one of my goals for this podcast is to create collaborations and networking. So hopefully there's someone listening who says, I could help with that. I'd like to do that project.
It's so open because I've grown it as far as I can go, and it will grow in the little pieces that I can. But I am I know that for it to reach a wider field, it needs more than just me. So I put that call out sometimes when I'm talking with people, and we'll see how it goes. I'll trust that will happen when the time is right. So
yeah, that's perfect. Well, if someone listening wanted to get in touch with you, how do they reach out to you? What's the best way?
Either through the Death Conversation Game. It's all me. So info@deathconversationgame.com or Instagram, Death Conversation Game, or my own website. It's all me. So angelafama.com, whichever strikes your fancy. If you send me an email, I'll find it. The death card one is probably better for it to go directly to me, because personal, it might not know that death is about me. So it's family.
Okay. Okay, so info@deathconversationgame.com.
Yes.
I'll put that in the show notes so that people can reach out to you, because you never know. I mean, it's really important to like put these feelers out there, because the right things will happen and the right people will come along.
I concur. Thank you for chatting with me and talking about this. And it's so inspiring for me to be reminded and see your face and to have this a reminder that, okay, I'm not alone in this battle. Like, it's not a battle. It's just changing narratives. So.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of us are just being called to do work around death from whatever fields we're in. And so I can imagine for you coming from photography and art, it feels like a strange calling or not a calling you were expecting. It was a little more natural for me coming from medicine, but I'm welcome to our world. And thank you for everything you're doing and bringing. And I hope you do find some collaborators, and I'll keep spreading the word for you as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, you're so welcome. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Angela Fama. I really was happy to learn about how she ended up being called to create the Death Conversation Game, this combination of being an artist and having an interest in love, which then led her to want to study death, but also her own close brush with death earlier in life that made her more curious about death and longing to talk about death. I think it's really powerful to see the ways that each one of us is called to come forward and to do some sort of work around death and to bring whatever talents we happen to have and whatever life experience or work experience we have to bring it all together to make an impact and to help spread the word that we need to pay attention to death. And so Angela, as an artist and photographer, has been called, and many of the other guests I've interviewed this year likewise have come from various fields and various areas of interest to be called forward to work on death. Xander Masser is one person, a physical therapist, but he was called to put together a book of his father's photography as part of his exploration of his own grief. Linda Findley started the Grief Cruises to help other people deal with grief while traveling, which I think is a really beautiful idea. John Byrne Barry, a novelist, decided to focus his latest novel on assisted suicide and the controversies around that issue. So I'm fascinated with how death itself seems to be calling us all together and bringing us in with our varied talents to help spread the word about death and dying. And I wanted to remind you that Angela did put out a call for anyone listening who might want to be a collaborator with her on this game to help her spread it in the world a little bit more. And remember, you can reach her at info@deathconversationgame.com if you just want to have a chat with her. And as you can see, she's a wonderful person and would be really fun to work with. So if you enjoy this content, please share it with other people who might also benefit from listening. And make sure that you have subscribed and then leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen, because that allows this podcast to be shown to more people who are searching for content like this. You can also help support the podcast by going to my page, eoluniversity.com/support, where you'll find three different ways of making financial contributions. You can join my page on Patreon and make monthly or annual contributions and get some great bonuses as well. You can just buy me a coffee every now and then. You can also make a one-time donation through PayPal. And you can also support the podcast just by buying my courses or books. So until we're together next week, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever happens next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.